Welcome to another edition of The List, a Write Fiction podcast. We've got a wonderful show for you today about our favorite desert island albums. Before we get started, if you love the pod, please take a moment to rate, review, and subscribe on your listening app. It helps us reach new listeners just like you. Also, be sure to check out our website, www.writefiction.com, where you can find the Spotify playlist with all our picks that we mentioned in the pod. Now, let's get to it. If you were stranded on a desert island, which album would you take with you? Assuming it's the last few albums you'll ever listen to for the years or months you have left, what kind of weight do you give those albums? Do you want it to be your all-time favorite albums, albums to keep you upbeat and happy as you waste away into nothing? Albums that might not be your faves, but the ones that you have no problems listening to on a daily basis? That's a lot to consider as you're wasting away on that island. Well, on today's show, we're going to dig deep into our psyches and try to explain the albums that'll comfort us on a lonely island as we discuss our favorite desert island albums. And with that, I'm going to get to the guys. Hey, there's Freddie Bo Betty Berman we have here today.
Fetty's here.
Fetty is Bo Betty.
I'm ready.
We have... And Freddie is very nice.
Rock steady.
Right? Nice. Ponteti. Okay.
Oh, wow. That's... you had so many options. So many endless, options.
Endless. I'm not good with like quick on the draw. I'm just so terrible at that. then we have Brendan Patty Meta McGee in here.
Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Yes. Mr. Sportsball himself. And then we have Adam Blonde Selick, the podiatrist Zelensky.
In the red corner. Yep.
Nice. In the red corner with
white
the
white trunks.
With the blonde mustache.
Blonde mustache and the Miami Vice shirt.
No one on. Yeah, I'll have to grow it back for the summer. I had somebody tell me I wasn't smiling enough, and I didn't have the Hawaiian shirt, and I wasn't smiling, so I wasn't Selick enough. So there has to be a reshoot.
We got
to
redo it. Good, good.
It took me like 3 weeks to grow. That took a while.
Aha.
All right. Well, you got to start now, man, because I got to say, a lot of people that I was talking to really appreciated that little montage.
You got to do it next time for the gram.
On the gram, yeah. Next time, my new thing that I'm going to try to do is put our faces on different bodies. So I got to figure out like faces for you, Brendan and Freddie, but
man.
I already got the body for you, blonde Selick.
Oh boy,
Jabba the Hutt.
Yeah, I got to find a good Stockton for me. But
I'm terrified.
An ear of corn.
Yeah. Oh, that's a new idea. I've been really digging into the Instagram lately, guys, and it's been a lot of fun, kind of exploring the nooks and crannies of how that world works. So what do you guys got going on today? Adam, I hear you're recording an album with our friend Vince. How's that going?
Oh, it's going quite well. We're done with the lead guitar on I'm trying to get my voice ready for the vocals here after a few weeks, but now me and Vince have a lot of fun with it. I threw a bunch of songs out, and we kick around a lot of ideas, try to keep it. I mean, we farm out a little help, but we try to keep it as self-contained as we can and do as, multi-instrumentally and whatnot.
Nice.
And I know in your last album, you only used cymbals. Is that right?
No snare drum.
No snare
drum. We didn't really have a drummer either. We did piecemeal like percussion. Nice. Kind of, Jeff Lynne style.
We
had a drummer this time.
I like that.
So you had a drummer this time.
We did a drummer this time. Yeah, me and a buddy of mine from a couple blocks away have been, during the pandemic, we just kind of, stayed in our own, we had our shared the bubble together, wherever you put it, and we just, arranged a lot of tunes. I wrote a lot, and
I didn't expect you would have got an old rider on this one.
They can't keep his interest long enough. He's doing soccer. He's more into soccer right now.
Okay.
And Pokemon cards.
So when can we expect the new album?
Yeah, late summer, early fall.
All right, cool. Very cool.
Yeah, like right with the right fiction one. It'll be like lots of me to be consumed or something.
Ooh, oh my You're God. You're going to dominate the press junket.
I'm going to dominate our Instagram feed for like 6 hours. Yep.
And how about you, Freddie? I know you're starting to get out and play a couple gigs. Are you playing with, is it John Byrne soon? Or?
Yeah, I have a gig with John at the end of the month at the Kennett Flash. They're doing a...
Oh, nice.
They're doing an outdoor rooftop series on top of the parking lot next door.
Wow.
So, should be...
So, you're playing on top of the roof? And then people are just sitting in the parking lot?
Yes. So, you know how some indoor parking lots, actually, their top level is outside. So, that's how it's working. I don't know if people are going to be sitting in their cars, or I imagine that just because of the percentage of people that are being vaccinated these days, that, you know, if you do something outdoors, people can actually be outdoors together. You know,
yeah.
I would hope. So, yeah, I think they set up a stage on the top level, which is open to the air, obviously. And people bring lawn chairs or whatever and band plays.
That's very cool.
Yeah.
And that's Kenneth Flash, you said?
Yeah, maybe we can get a gig there. Who knows?
Yeah, you got to talk to some people. You got to schmooze and booze while you're out there.
Right.
We need to play together in the same general non-internet vicinity too. We gotta do that,
right?
Yeah, that's actually a question. It's like, man, this practice thing, we gotta figure out how to do that, guys.
You gotta remember these freaking songs again.
And how about you, Brandon? You're always working on something or other, man. What's the latest thing you're working on,
man? Yeah, I'm in the middle of a few recording projects right now. Pre-production on an EP for an artist, recording some vocals for another EP. I'm finishing an album for another artist. This Friday is our last session. And then I'm producing this event I'm super excited about. So I have a couple friends of mine right now are, as we speak, walking the 902 miles of the Underground Railroad.
Oh, cool.
Wow.
And they're doing it to raise awareness for human trafficking. So they asked me to try to put together some sort of live stream, semi like small attended audience event. And so I'm working on that, and that'll be really cool. So there'll be performances, and they're going to talk about what they're doing, and should be pretty, pretty special. So I'm excited about that.
Right on.
That's super cool. Very man. Cool. What do you got, Adam?
I just have a question for the panel here, since we're still in our shoot the breeze segment. I keep on seeing all kinds of, you know, all the bands, all the artists are, you know, shows are being, they're happening. And all of that, you know, I just saw like Wilco Sleater Kinney, you know, that's coming, you know, all the dates that were pushed back a year are going to be honored and are going to happen. You guys buying tickets to anything?
No,
interest yet. Of going back is not there yet.
Not really.
No, it's there yet. I just haven't found something I like, to be honest with you. Yeah. I'm what they call picky. So,
well, yeah, if anyone that's listening to the podcast knows that.
So. I'm not there yet. I don't even know if I'm there yet. For me to perform a gig indoors.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We're going to have to see. We're going to have to see how it goes in the fall.
Yeah. I'm totally taking it day by day.
Yep. Same.
Right. Well, there was once something before we get to the next little area. There is something that I talked with you, Brendan, about when we were recording last week. And I just thought it was the most fascinating thing ever. And like the, you know, the 10-year-old me was just like, what? This is crazy. So I just found out that Brendan is the guy that hits the gong at Citizens Bank Park. When somebody hits a home run and you see the big bell going back and forth, when it goes to all the way on the side, Brendan's the guy that hits the gong. That's him. Yeah. He's hitting the gong.
And
am I the only person that thinks that's amazing?
You might be. You might be the only
possible.
One. I'm also the guy that I hit the button whenever the Philadelphia Union score a goal. There's a song called the Dupe Song. I know this is probably less people out there than baseball. Yeah, that's it. Adam does a perfect rendition.
Yeah, that doesn't hit my heart as much as the baseball one. But, you know, when it's a homer, you're just, like, jacked up. You got all that energy, and you see the thing going by, and it's like, gong, and I'm like, yeah!
Yeah, big swinging Liberty Bell.
Yeah, I always actually thought it was just, like, that's just, there was no, it just, when it goes to the side, just it hits a gong on the, on the one side when the lights go to that side.
Have you ever accidentally hit the gong when you weren't supposed to?
Not so far. I have a perfect record so far.
Nice.
I'm batting a really, thousand. Really? That's right, isn't it? Isn't that the right term?
Yes.
I guess. Yeah. I guess. Or how about this? You ever play somebody's like walk-up music, like the wrong walk-up music to somebody's bat?
Almost. Yeah, almost. That can get tricky, especially with the National League, because there's so many swapping going. Yeah, somebody, you know, when they get it, put
pinch
it.
Pinch hitter. Pinch hitter. Yeah,
everything gets shifted.
Like, it's like a big swinger party down there.
Wow. So, yeah. Anyway, I think that's the coolest thing ever. Today, you get the coolest guy award today.
I'm so glad.
We had to do a walk-up music pod. What walk-up music song you'd have? You know,
that would be a good one actually. Because it's funny. When I was at a game, they feed you beforehand. So I'm sitting and I can hear distantly. There's like these young kids that are part of like the. Like ushers, I guess, and they were like, "What would your walk-up music be if you had walk-up music?" And I was like, "Actually, that would be a cool podcast.
Interesting.
Like, what would be your top three picks for your walk-up music?"
Yeah, I don't know right now, but
okay.
I'm sorry to percolate on that.
Stay tuned, people.
Stay tuned out there, everyone. Oh, big hitters coming!
I don't know when that's gonna drop.
Oh boy.
Well, on that note, today we're going to give you our favorite Desert Island albums, and so if you're just eating a whole bunch of cake, this is the album you want to listen to. So you know, to kick it off, we're gonna go with you, Blonde Selleck. What are your three favorite Desert Island albums, sir?
Well, first of all, if I even have the ability to play a record on an island, I'm going to radio for help with my electricity. So it's always, there's always a fatal flaw in that right away. But anywho, I picked three for three distinct reasons, and I will touch upon them incredibly briefly. But number three, I'm stranded on an island. I need a little sense of humor, so I have Help by the Beatles. Help, I need somebody help, not just anybody help, you know I need someone help. That's kind of my little stay sane with humor. Then number two is my Build a Fire at Night album, the Basement Tapes, with Bob Dylan and the band. Long distance operator. Place this call, it's not for fun. I feel like I get like two albums in one there, because like, you know, it's Bob Dylan and the band. And if I could cheat, I would do the complete Basement Tapes, which is like almost 7 hours long. And then I kind of have a little more music to handle on my desert island. And then number one, when I was honeymooning in Puerto Rico, I would wake up every morning and put on El Rey Bravo, Tito Puente. And it's just something about being on an island and listening to Tito Puente just kind of makes me, you know, soak in the environment. And if I'm there, I might as well have appropriate music. So,
Tito Puente. Wait, but why did you pick him for your Puerto Rican stay?
He's Puerto Rican.
Yeah, but why him in this album? Like every morning you're just like, oh, Tito, take us into the morning.
It just felt appropriate.
Oh.
You know?
I don't know.
I mean, there's plenty of options you could choose, yeah, but I just went with Tito. I mean, can't say I have a...
You didn't pick Pitbull or anybody like that? Or?
I'm waking up, man.
Rihanna?
I'm just waking up. I just want some nice fun Latin. That's all I want. I don't know, Pitbull's a little too intense for me in the morning. And
I've actually seen Pitbull live. His band was killer.
I've heard that.
Killer.
They get paid a lot of money, I bet. That guy is raking it in.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, those are mine. Right.
Nice, Freddie.
Yeah.
What are your top three Desert Island albums, sir?
Real quick, though, Adam, did you change two of your picks during the week?
I did not, no.
Interesting. Okay, my top Number three.
You're about to get it, sir. You're about to get it.
I was just curious. I could have sworn.
Adam usually, like, he usually locks him in, from what I've noticed anyway.
Yeah.
I'm not a hemmer and har. I don't hem and har. No.
I must be thinking of something
else. That would be me. That would be me.
Maybe I was thinking of someone else.
Captain 11th hour quarantine. Yeah. It's like, oh, hey, the pod's in an hour. Here are my picks.
Right? Okay, my top three. Number three, and these are all for sentimental reasons. They all take me back to a place, a specific time in my life. Number three, Santana's first album, entitled Santana. By the way, we have two versions of Oye Como Va on the playlist.
Yes, the original
by Tito Puente and Carlos Santana's big smash hit cover of it. All right.
Wow.
My number two Desert Island pick would be the Rolling Stones' Let It Bleed, 1969. You can't always get what you want. You can't always get what you want, but if you try sometimes, well, you might. And number one, John Coltrane's A Love Supreme. From 1965, which obviously I wasn't aware of when I was 9 years old in 1965. But I became aware of it afterwards, and an album's good when they have a church that's created around an album, Church of St. John, Will I Am Coltrane in San Francisco. Are you guys aware of that?
Mm. Yes.
No.
That's neat.
What it's like, Will I Am? So Will I Am created a John Coltrane train coach?
No, John Will.
So the guy from the Black Peas.
Yeah, that's what you would think. But I guess John Coltrane's middle name is William. So it was John Will I Am Coltrane.
Oh, they should change that.
Both happen to be related to the Bay Area for some reason. So
yeah, that's weird.
Yep,
that's weird,
true,
guys.
But true.
Fergie, you want to go with Fergie instead?
Church of Fergie.
Yep.
Yeah.
So those are my three. Those are my three.
All right. Great picks, man. Brendan, what do you got for your favorite Desert Island albums?
So I am firing up my solar-powered turntable. That's how I'm envisioning this. Uh-huh. And with my third pick, I went with Alan Toussaint's 1975 record, Southern Nights. The last plane to leave on the quarter. I was down. Last chance to get your last thrill. The amazing, delightful record. My second pick, I went with Back to Black, Amy Winehouse, 2006. And my number one Desert Island record, I went with Ask the Ages from Sonny Chirac from 1991. And I yield my time, gentlemen.
Yeah, man, I'm going to come back to that Sonny Chirac album. That John was like killer.
I know.
Like, I never heard of it. I feel like I'm like disappointed in myself. And his wife, his ex-wife, was from Philadelphia too, and her contributions were interesting to her, to his musical legacy as well.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very, very interesting. So I'll give my top three Desert Island picks. My number three pick is from 1989. Tender Lover by Babyface. Sunshine, This album is killer. Gotta check it out. My number two album, which I just when the lights go down, when you're driving home somewhere, and the lights the sun is the moon is out, gotta go. Nina Simone Sings the Blues. Now, if you're out there on the island and you're just sad by yourself or whatnot, come on. 1967, Nina Simone Sings the Blues by Nina Simone. And my number one choice, which you can't find actually on Spotify or almost anywhere else. There's a couple of tracks you can find on YouTube, but it's the album 1980 release album Expressions of Life by the Heath Brothers, by Philadelphia's own Heath Brothers. And this album is tremendous. I found it in like a yard sale somewhere, or antique shop or something. And this on vinyl. And I just picked it up because I knew the guys were from Philly. And my mind was blown. Their version of Confirmation is unbelievable. Anyway, so that's my top three. And we're going to take a short break and come back with a lot more discussion. So hold on. And we are back. And this topic is an interesting topic, the Desert Island album picks. And I've seen a lot everywhere. Everybody's got a list of their Desert Island albums. And everybody has like a different way to look at how these albums, like why they pick them. Some people like literally put themselves on, in their minds, put themselves on an island that has one palm tree and a fictitious way to listen to music from the birds. And other people are like, it's just kind of like if you're going into your room for a couple hours, what albums do you have? Freddie, you've kind of picked some really solid picks for your desert island experience. So tell us a little more about how kind of you came to these and in your decision making for this topic.
As I explained earlier, all three of these albums have said that. Sentimental place in my heart. I mean, the Santana album, I remember being up in my room listening to that record after, indulging in certain substance. And it was just, it was mind altering. It was because there was nothing like that available on the airwaves,
Right.
It kind of turned me on to, a whole new way of rhythms.
Can I ask you something about that stuff? So back then, I imagine in my head, I'm imagining back then, like everybody was thinking, oh, who's the best guitar player in the world? Where does Santana fit into that mix?
Well, I mean, I'm a fan of his playing, but.
But were they like, oh, he's above Eric Clapton, he's above this person or that person? Or was it kind of just separate?
That's a good question. Not being a guitar player, I mean, Hendrix was always my guy, from the minute I heard him. And we've discussed this on previous pods, like first time I've heard him was just like, what planet, And right. So, I dig Santana's playing, always have, but for me, it was more of a rhythmic thing, like, wow, these are some interesting rhythms that mixing with rock is something that was never done. Nobody was doing that, and it was getting played on all kinds of stations. It was getting played on the underground psychedelic rock stations, and it was also getting played on the black stations at the same time. So it was everywhere. 1969, I was 13 years old, and this. That record kind of fired me up. You know what I mean? Yeah. As did the Stones, Let It Bleed, just because it was so great. It was, you know, for me, one of their defining moments. You know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely their best album.
In my opinion, that and Sticky Fingers, to me. A lot of people like Exile, and I don't, you know, well, that's also what happens when you have a double album, which we've explored as well. Nobody picked that one, did they?
I picked an honorable mention.
Honorable mention. But, you know, when you have a double record, it's hard to have every song be great.
Yeah.
You know, just because of the sheer volume. So.
Very true.
I don't know.
And then A Love Supreme, of course. But going to your you know, kind of analysis of how you stripped it down to these top three, like, what do these mean for, like, if you're listening to these over and over again, like, are you just kind of sitting on an island, A Love Supreme, A Love, just kind of waiting for the boat to come by?
That's it. I could meditate upon the ascension. Of my butt getting off the island. I'm ascending back to the mainland.
Then what? With Let It Bleed, you're just like, all right, you know, if I could find this coconut to end this all right now, that'd be great.
And you kind of have some connective tissue between your Love Supreme and Santana choices, because then Santana and John McLaughlin did Love Supreme.
Yeah, and they had both had the spiritual, you know, context to their to their work. Yep.
But I'm overall, I'm a little surprised at some of the other choices that you guys made. That Babyface album, Whip Appeal, is a great song.
Oh, it's tremendous.
Great song. But as an overall album, I guess because I'm not a 90s kid, I don't get it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, I'm glad you brought that up, because I'll talk about it right now, Freddie.
Please
Thank
do.
You so much
Tell
for
us
the handoff.
About it. Tell us.
So in my picks for this desert island,
yeah,
I was thinking, what do I want to do to spend my time? Like, if I'm just sitting here, right? What just makes me feel good by myself? I'm like, I like singing. That's what I like doing. So when I'm sad, I sing. When I'm happy, I sing. You know, when I, whatever. I'm always
When you're even keeled, you sing.
No, not really, actually.
That's the one you don't sing, is what you're
that's what I don't sing.
You want to hear somebody else sing.
not really. Maybe that's when I listen to instrumentals. But I was thinking, like, dang, like, if I'm on this island, I just want to be singing. And man, this album has some of my favorite songs to sing, because Babyface can sing his behind off, and the songs are just like so singable. They're kind of hard. They're hard to sing, but you know. So if you can sing them, like, you know, somebody I know, like me, then it's wonderful. And so that's why actually this made my desert island pick, because I would just love singing. There's some like boppers on there. There's some slow jams on there. There's Whip Appeal. The only problem, as you're singing these songs, there's like no girl on the island there too. So unless there's a girl, that's even
better. You're going to have a lot of time to practice, and you can, you know, work on some.
Yeah. Wait for the boat to come by. Like, yo, got some Babyface for you guys. Yeah.
I don't know. With Babyface, I almost feel it kind of has the Todd Rundgren effect for me, in that, like, I would think of him more of a producer than a, you know, an artist, like a solo artist.
Dude, this album, he could sing his butt off, and his songs are tremendous. He's kind of got a certain thing, and that's maybe where the challenge comes in, because it's not that varied of like a style or whatever. But what he does, when he does what he does, you just can't, and vocally, you can't mess with that dude.
Well, has he been all that prolific as a solo artist?
He has. I mean, he has, but it's just like, you know, it's like, you know, different album, same day or something, whatever. You know what I mean? It's just like, you know, instead of kind of, like if you take artists like Prince, where he's doing like random things on different albums, or, you know, other artists of that kind, like, it's just like the same thing over and over again. And when he writes for other people, it's like a Babyface song written for Toni Braxton, a Babyface song written for Whitney Houston or something like that. But this album for him, for me, it's just so singable. So singable. And go ahead.
Well, and then would Nina Simone, that'd be another singable one?
No. Nina Simone is like, oh man, I just feel so bad for myself. And she's like wrapping me in
That's your wallower.
Yes. Yeah. She's just wrapping me in a blanket of of bluesy sadness, and I'm just like, and wanting and longing. And then so the as Heath I'm Brothers sitting there, just... and the Heath Brothers is just like, I wouldn't say it's my favorite, but I can put this song, this album on every day, and every day I love it more and more.
Nice.
And so that's where this this album comes in. It's just, you can't find it anywhere, and maybe that's why. But I just put the album on, the vinyl on, and I just listen to this nonstop every day. And I never get tired of it. Never, ever get tired of it. So that's why that sits on my list. But, you know, Adam, oh, what were you saying? Freddie, Brendan, you have something?
Well, I wanted to kind of segue into something that you just said, Aaron, about, like, why you pick some of these things of, like, you don't get tired of listening to it. So, like, what about the concept of Desert Island albums? Like, for me, I was thinking of it in terms of the value of music, because on first blush, it's like, okay, this is yet another episode where we're talking about sort of an antiquated thing. Like, there's no real media players anymore where you have physical media that you have to be concerned about. You just used to be like Desert Island Discs or whatever. And it's like, now you can have anything you ever want to listen to at your fingertips. And so for me, I think the albums that I picked and from what I'm hearing, the albums everybody picked, it's like the value of the album, the inherent value, intrinsic value, I guess, is just so high that you couldn't ever go without the album. You know what I mean?
Yes. Man, that was so deep, dude. Adam, come on, follow up with something.
Nah, I didn't pick it like that.
I went
environmental. I went a little cheekier with it because I'm just like, what am I going to pick my three favorite? My honorable mentions, I picked a couple of more of my, like, you know, sentimental favorites, but I mean, I just kind of tried to be a little more funny with it. By the way, Southern Nights is that, you know, maybe I would want that on my Desert Island too. That is just end to end. I'm a bigger fan of Mr. Toussaint by the day, but I picked the Basement Tapes because I wanted to pick, saying you're talking about the, you know, not having to be like physical media, you know, so I could have like six and the complete Basement Tapes came out in the last, like, I don't know, 5 or 6 years or so. And it is on Spotify. And I think it's like 6.5 hours of all their stuff from the basement. I'm just like, it'd take me a while to get through that. If I'm stranded for a while and have like a, you know, a volleyball. So it's like
Utility. Your pick was Utility.
Utility and environment. Tito for the environment. Beatles for humor, you know, help. And it's like Sing It and Cry, you know, or something, you know. And then Basement Tapes, just so I could just, you know, burn the midnight oil on, you know, like I just concentrate on a different, like, hour every night of the complete, you know, I could learn the complete Basement Tapes. Maybe I'll string really... together. I'll do a little gut string kind of, you know, ukulele and learn them.
There
all.
You go. A liar. Yeah. I can only picture you sitting on that little island like, help.
I need somebody.
Not just anybody. Wow. So you took this one a little different. Like, I appreciate that though.
You gotta put some twists in there here and again. I mean, you know, I do have a Willie Nelson album on my honorable mentions. So, you know,
It'll be floating up very soon, I'm sure.
As you do.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm gonna send out a message in a bottle. I'm gonna send out a message in a bottle.
Oh, it'll be like nobody picked the Police.
Yeah,
nah, they don't make the Desert Island.
I mean, maybe not your Desert Island.
They make the Desert Island, maybe. The Desert Island.
I think Solo Sting has a better chance with you, Aaron.
I want to talk about Sonny Chirac for a second. So you guys know he did the theme for Space Ghost, right?
I read that.
Did you know that? Yeah. And he also plays on Miles Davis' Jack Johnson record.
Yeah, I saw that.
Yep. Incredible.
Yep.
Yeah, and that.
I'm surprised at that pick. I'm surprised at that pick, man.
Well, yeah, so if we could talk about Ask the Ages for a minute. But, like, so I did go deep dive into Sonny's discography over the past week to prep, and I had sent you guys that kind of obscure kind of R&B funk record, Brute Force, from 1970 the other day.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if any of you heard that, but I just listened to that. I kind of was like peppering that into my listening of all of our other choices. But I think Ask the Ages for me is just this amazing like sleeper masterpiece, and it could easily go on an underrated podcast list. I almost included Sonny Chirac on our guitar players podcast list, but then I thought about it and I was like, you know what? It's really Ask the Ages that I love. I love his playing, but this is like the pinnacle of his work. Right. And if you look at who's playing on it, it's basically part of Coltrane's band. He's got Pharoah Sanders. He's got Elvin on there sounding as good as Elvin ever did, in my opinion. But then the thing that I love the most, and the more that I've read about Sonny's philosophy on the guitar, I don't really like guitar players in jazz as a general kind of overarching statement. Of course, there are exceptions to that. And Sonny Chirac did not either. He actually always wanted to play not like a guitar player. And I think you hear that on this album. But he also loved playing loud, distorted guitar, which is like on the surface so out of place. But on this album makes total sense. It's like in the tradition of the Sheets of Sound of Coltrane. I think it works perfectly. And this album is beautiful, grade A.
Yeah, when I found that this album was released in 1991, I almost fell out my chair. Like, I thought for sure this album came out in 76 or 75 or something. And to find out it came out in 1991, and not only that, but all these dudes were still alive from Coltrane's band. I was like, what?
Yeah.
This album is a real, it was a real treat to listen to. Sure, I mean, I recommend everybody to check this album out. Some other stuff he did was like off the wall, though, man. It was some straight off the wall stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. This is where you want to start and perhaps end with Sonny Chirac's discography. But his sideman appearances are, there are some bright moments as we discussed.
Yeah. And actually his story, like, man, he like was just not playing. He was like a chauffeur for a while in like the 80s. He just stopped playing for a while. I mean, like, it's crazy story. Yeah. Crazy story.
And kind of sad, too. I mean, he died only a few years after Ask the Ages, and I don't think he ever really got the attention that he deserved.
Right. Yeah. Just an incredible story, though, I got to say. But I'm going to your more conventional pick, Brendan.
Such shade in the tone of that voice.
Well, we know which album he's picking there.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Back to Black. I do love this album, but... how did this end on your desert island? So I love this album, but I've heard it way too much for it to be on my desert island album.
On yours.
But for you, you didn't hit that threshold yet, I guess, huh?
No, I put it on there for a couple reasons. If I was only going to have three albums for the rest of my life, I needed something that was going to scratch the itch of the old school R&B soul, but also scratching the itch of like some modern production techniques and sounds. And so then I thought of this one and I was like, you know what? I don't really ever get tired listening to Back to Black. And even after like those string of shows that we did playing the album, and Adam was a part of a couple of those, I didn't get tired of playing it night after night. I didn't get tired of learning the material. Wow. It actually got better for me. And as many times as I've heard Rehab on the radio, I just don't, it doesn't, like I'm cool with it. Every time I crank it up.
Wow. And Adam, you were part of that that live experience. Did you get tired of it at all, or did it grow inside of you as well?
I haven't listened to a note of Amy Winehouse since I last played one of those shows.
Much different take.
I'd rather listen to Frank.
You would.
Freddie, you got something, man?
Which brings me to a question. Aaron. How is there no Prince on your desert island list? What is up with that?
Well, I'll be honest with you, except for Purple Rain. Well, I was actually thinking, one, I know we had the gentleman's agreement. So one, I was like, well, I know all the songs. I could just like sit there and sing them in my head.
There you go.
You're your own jukebox.
Yeah. So I'm packing a couple more albums just in my mind. And then we have our gentleman's agreement. And then I was thinking, beyond those, like what albums just I could just sit with, and I could just it to be these three albums, and I could just sit with them over and over and over and over and over again.
Right on.
And that's kind of where I came to these. And then Prince's albums, like I love Prince to death, but man, some of his albums is just like you hit a couple songs and it's like, what in the hell are you doing?
Yep.
but I mean, that's where you get the good with the bad.
Right, right, right.
You know?
And what about that guy?
I wasn't going to do compilation albums either.
Right, right, right.
Like, because if I put like the Prince hits A side and B side or whatever, then I'd be like, then you'd be number one.
Exactly.
And I'm glad nobody did greatest hits, because I would have taken you to task hardcore.
Well, you're scaring everybody, Brendan.
That's right. That was what I was going for.
Watch out.
I do instill fear into those.
You would be sorry, mister.
You would get a strongly worded email
but
from me.
But on that last pod that we recorded, you had a compilation.
As who, me?
No, Brendan.
Which one was the compilation?
The psychedelic.
Oh yeah, you did have a compilation.
You had a compilation, ooh, dude.
They were all previously unreleased. That doesn't count.
Oh,
they were here.
Creating your own loopholes on the fly.
When it works for you.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, well, of course, I make my own narratives here.
Of course. Well, real quick, I want to talk. I want to change the subject. With Joe the Hook. That album behind, to the right of your head, Aaron, that Marvin Gaye album. I'm surprised that's not on your list, too.
Nah, man, that'd have brought me down.
I want to tie that in, segue about the CNN documentary that just aired last night. Anyone see it? About the making of
About it. Didn't see it, though.
I'm just curious.
CNN has a documentary about Marvin Gaye?
About what's going on.
Yeah, what's going on.
Yep.
And, I have not great feelings about that sort of stuff, but I think that's just me. I don't think that's anybody else. I hear people talking about it.
I taped it. Whatever. DVR'd
I hear people talking about Marvin Gaye, like, you know what? Why don't you just make a new What's Going On? We can talk about that. You know, we did that thing. It was cool. We loved it.
Didn't that guy do that? Wasn't there someone that did that?
Yeah, Devin Gilfillian.
He didn't make a new one. He just redid the old one.
He re-recorded.
Yeah.
Yeah. And for some people, like I said, that's, you know, for some people, you know, that's how they get down. You know what I mean? But like for me personally, that's my take. And I understand that, you know, I understand who I am, you know, as far as like my singular, you know, I guess grumpiness.
Sure.
You know where to tap the anger. You know where to find your.
Well, plus Rolling Stone put it as number one, so that's like a death sentence for that album now.
Right?
No, it's a great album. It's a wonderful album. Don't get me wrong.
Is
like
it
it's
the greatest
right
album
there.
Of all time.
Yes, Adam, it is. But still, you know. But you know, as I'm talking about my grumpiness, and my tears of rage. You guys see what I did there?
Yes.
Well, yeah.
I was listening to that Basement Tapes album, you know, with Tears of Rage. Hey, hot take. I like this version better. I like the Basement Tapes version of Tears of Rage better. Is anybody there with me on that? And that's saying something for me. Like Bob Dylan singing Tears
instead
of Rage
Richard Daniel, someone
else. Yes.
Yeah, I could see that. Maybe it's at least refreshing because it's lesser known.
Now,
yeah, I thought it was wonderful.
I have a question. Isn't the real quote unquote Basement Tapes without drums? There's no drums, right? Levon had left.
Oh no, Richard played drums.
Oh, that's right. But I mean, overall, there's not a lot of drums. They were exploring the American Songbook. Yeah. That was the whole thing. It was like a workshop for them. They started, you know, going through all these folk songs. And then eventually Dylan would bring in some originals and throw them in there. And that's what I heard.
Yeah, there's not an overwhelming amount of drums. But before Levon came, Richard Manuel, that talented guy. And he was still at his peak back then, too. He had such a short, wonderful peak. He could play drums. Yeah, he was so talented, played drums. And was it just Garth Hudson just had a couple of... He just had hooked up a couple of mics there, and this is like what 66. And they juiced him up a little bit in the studio before they actually released it, you know. But I think, you know, it's just kind of a cool piece of history there. People still go visit that house.
Oh
Big
yeah,
Pink.
It's yeah. It's like a Airbnb. I was actually just talking to Phil D'Agostino about that. over the weekend. He went up there a couple of years ago. Turns out the guy who lives there now, or who owns it, is a guy that used to be front of house for NRBQ. And somehow, like, usually when people come around, he kind of, you know, tells them to leave.
Shoes them.
Yeah. Well, somehow when Phil and his wife went up there, they encountered the guy, and he started talking to him, and they started talking about music, and, oh, I play music, and NRBQ, blah, blah, blah. And they rent the place out, but you're not allowed to go into the basement for some reason.
What?
Yep. Like people are going to take pieces of the joist or something.
I don't know. Maybe he's got some gear down there. Who knows? I do not.
I bet it's a memorabilia thing. Some people would be taking pieces of stuff. I mean, what did Kurt Cobain's six locks of hair go for? Like, people like weird ass memorabilia.
You're so right. People are the worst, aren't they?
Weird.
I think all of them. They're all terrible.
You know, you're going to buy this house. I mean, why don't you buy the house next to that house? Don't buy that house.
Yeah. You know that like, there's going to be the pilgrimages.
Yeah.
And if you kept it pink, you're just leaving a big target on
you're
it.
You're asking for it.
Buy the house down the street. Don't buy that house. Yep. But I do have a question for you, and this might be just totally stupid, but I saw like the Last Waltz video or whatever, the movie. And from what I know about Robbie Robertson is he's kind of like a interesting dude. And when they were doing the basement tapes or whatever, like, what was the relationship between Robbie Robertson and like Dylan? Because I know like they're both kind of like songwriter lead dogs, if you will. Adam, what do you got, man?
Well, like Robbie and Bob, hired the band, and like I actually had Robbie come down for Blonde on Blonde, they worked well together. I mean, and they traveled the world. I mean, Levon left, and then they still traveled the rest of the world. I've read Levon's book and I've read Robbie's book, but there was never no competition. I think. I forget it was a Dylan or the band. I think maybe the band got away and then invited Dylan up, or is it Dylan got away and invited? I don't know for sure who, invited who up, but I think there was, to my knowledge, at least if anyone can correct me, there was a good sense of camaraderie there more than anything. I mean, then they did in like 74, they, got back together and did that, another album and tour.
Yeah.
Right at the height of the band, I guess maybe Dylan was needing to boost a little bit then, but with the Last Waltz, I'm a big fan of the band, but I'm not a big fan of the Last Waltz. I just kind of just felt it was a little, the whole concept of it kind of just, Robbie bought everybody out of their publishing rights, and he was just breaking the band up, and they had a big room full of cocaine, and they just have this congratulatory like circle jerk to finish off the band. I just didn't like it.
So you're saying you didn't like it?
No.
No, didn't like it. Okay.
But the basement tapes, I think, is a much purer time for them, way early on. This is pre Big Pink. I mean, some of the big songs of Big Pink are, amongst these.
Right. That's very true. That's very true. So we're going to take a short break and come back with a lot more honorable mentions for you guys. So stick around. Hold on. And we are back to give you guys our honorable mention picks for this week. And we're going to kick it to, I'm going to kick to my buddy, the podiatrist to give us his two honorable mentions for us this week, man. What do you got, Adam?
Make sure you have some good shoes on that desert island. I don't know how you maintain them with all that salt water, but it ain't be good.
It's just flip-flops.
Bad dad joke aside, I went with more conventional choices here for my honorable mentions. I went with Radiohead's 1997 effort OK Computer. Which, along with the band's self-titled album, their second album, and Beach Boys' Pet Sounds, is like my three-headed, number one of all time. And then I also went with, because it's been, it must have been 4 or 5 podcasts since I've mentioned Willie, so I went with Shotgun Willie. Just because it's got a little of the country flavor, a little bit of horns, and a little, you know, a little funky. It's a nice little mixed bag Willie album. So those are my two.
Very nice, sir. And I think about that OK Computer album, and I'm like, damn, if I was on the island, man, and I listen to this over and over again, I might just like just randomly start walking in the water and just like walk away somewhere.
Just thinking, you're like, I can make it. I can do it.
Well, just listen to Paranoid Android over and over. I'm like, you know what? You guys got me. You got me. I did it. You got it. Freddie, what are your honorable bitches?
Two live records. One is one that I grew up with that my dad used to make me play along to when I was first learning to play the drums. And that's the famous 1938 Carnegie Hall Jazz Concert with Benny Goodman. It's really cool because it's a big band album, but they also broke it down to a quintet, I think, maybe. Teddy Wilson, just piano, Benny on clarinet, Gene Krupa on drums. I forget who the bass player was. So they broke it down from a big band. And it's also got the famous version of Benny Goodman's big band playing Sing, 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 the Louis Prima. A song with the famous Gene Krupa drum solo that my dad used to make me play along to prove to him that he wasn't wasting money on drum lessons. So that's nice. That album has a very special place in my heart. Yeah.
That's a cool reveal. That's a cool reveal. Yeah.
And then the other one is James Brown live at the Apollo. One of the greatest live records ever, which we have alluded to in the past on a live record podcast, Brendan, right?
That was one of mine. Yes. Yes. Good memory, sir.
Yep.
Speaking of that, Brendan, like knowing what I know about you, this definitely could not have made your Desert Island list because the production quality is terrible. Is that safe to assume, sir?
Oh, we got to go there again? No, I thought I was clear on the live podcast that
it's all on tape. It's all everything you've ever said on this has been recorded, and you can't escape it. You can't escape yourself.
Well, for all of our new listeners out there, the live at the Apollo, all production shortcomings are forgiven with that record in my book. Let me be clear, everyone.
Man, you got rules, and then you like break them right away, don't you?
Yeah, I know. I think the subtext, the subheading of this podcast is finding the hypocrisy in all of my picks.
That's why you're meta, bud. That's why you're meta.
You can just waltz right through it.
Good choice.
What are your honorable mentions, man?
Well, I went with my similar theme of albums that just do not tire me at all. I could hear again and again, and there's depth and there's wonder and there's greatness. And so my first honorable mention, I went with Zappa, the Grand Wazoo. It's to me my favorite Zappa album, never gets old. And then my other one is a little more recent. I went with The Lateness of Dancers from 2006 from his Golden Messenger, MC Taylor. Another record that's just amazing songwriting, really awesome start to finish, kind of timeless sounding, and I'll put it on at any time.
Very cool picks. Very cool picks.
What do you got, Corn Teeth?
So this is Aaron Brown, the John Stockton of this podcast, a.k.a. what Adam said. And my honorable mentions, my first honorable mention that I'll mention here is The Inner Mounting Flame, released in 1971 by Mahavishnu Orchestra. And I'll be honest with you guys, for the past, I don't know, 15 years that I've loved this album, I've always thought the title was Inner Mountain Flame. Inner Mountain Flame? It's kind of disappointing.
I like Mountain better. I'm kind of with you.
Yeah, Inner Mountain Flame. I was like, I always thought, oh man, they're still, man, they are like.
Where's this mountain? There.
You should send a strongly worded email.
But Inner Mountain Flame? That's dumb.
I think the mountain is on the album cover of the following album.
Yeah, well, it
Birds
should be this one. I mean,
like, the mountain.
Mountain
or is
flame?
That a volcano? I'm not sure. I'm surprised at that pick. I love that record.
Oh man, I could listen to this record. When I first heard this record, I just like looked at the wall and listened to it over and over again for like a month, 2 months.
Pretty crazy.
Just like over and over again. Yeah. And because it's just got everything. And you know, this is one of the only, I guess, jazz guitar guys that I'm like super duper into. That does the jazz guitar thing, but adds that, you know, that grit to it, if you will.
And John I love McLaughlin. Jazz guitar. I don't understand that hatred of jazz guitar.
Well, we're going to have to find out on another episode.
Yeah,
Seth.
Least favorite jazz guitarists.
Yes. There you go. Least favorite instruments in jazz.
Hello, this on Irish Dreams. Come on. Come on.
Yeah, it's great. Oh, man. It's great.
Beautiful. And anyway.
It ties to your other pick. It ties to your other pick, Mr. McLaughlin there.
My other pick is, you know, I just went away from our gentleman's agreement, and I just was like, you know what, I'm going to pick Kind of Blue.
Yeah,
1959, because it should be on it's pretty much on everybody's list. I mean, let's be real.
It's
here.
A gimme.
The honorable mentions are a little looser on the gentleman's agreements, too. You know.
Yeah.
According to you guys.
Ungentlemanly. Oh.
for now, until Brendan changes his mind.
so true. So true. And everyone knows Kind of Blue. And, you know, of course, you know, there's Flamenco Sketches, which is maybe my favorite on that. And all blues, of course. So. But yeah, those are my honorable mention picks. And Adam, I'm going to give it to you to kind of close it out today. What are your thoughts, buddy?
Oh, out on a desert island. I mean, what do you think? Like the movie Castaway? That's better desert
Castaway,
island movies.
Solid.
Yeah, getting aside the you know, the technological issues of having like no electricity and, you know, thing that just shoots it down right away. It's an interesting exercise to, you know, kind of, you know, put such a finite point on like what you'd be listening to for, you know, the foreseeable future. I don't know how you guys are even thinking desert island. You're thinking like, you're not like you're going to be there for 6 weeks and someone's going to come by. It's more like years upon years upon years. And it does make you kind of shave down, you know, what you really want to do, or you pick environmental things by me or length. I saw the Brendan, the Zappa on your thing, and I almost picked Lather just because it's like a quadruple album. So I was almost thinking quantity over anything. But I don't know. I think it's just kind of a fun exercise to do, to kind of like try to, you know, put a period, you know, on your final listening, you know?
Yeah, I definitely think so. I do want to point one thing out though. And that's, it seems like you guys have a lot more, I guess, life skill or like hunting skills or wilderness skills. Cause if I'm on a desert island, I'm like dead in like 2 hours. And you guys are like, let me find the largest playlist, the largest album. It's 16 hour, because you're gonna be alive for all this. I'm gonna be dead in 2 hours.
You're just gonna chugging salt water. You're just gonna start drinking ocean water right off the bat.
Like, taste it.
You might make you might make it to Blue and Green. You might make it that far.
Yeah, I mean, like my honorable mentions will never be listened to. Ever.
What are these berries? They look delicious.
You guys are like, 50 hours in, I'm like, listen to the basement tapes.
You're just like, I'm just waiting to die. So I'm putting on Nina Simone and waiting to die.
Pretty much. Pretty much. Anyway, Brendan, Freddie, you got any things to leave with the people at all? Nope. All right. On that note, thank you guys so much for listening to us on the list here. on behalf of Freddie Bobetti, Berman, Brendan, Meta Patty, McGann, Adam, Blonde, Selick, the podiatrist, Zelensky. I'm Aaron. Go ahead, Adam.
Gordeep.
The John Stockton of podcasts, and Brown. And thank you guys so much for listening. We'll be back again next week with another episode for your ears. Take care.
Right, fiction.